Were you pleased though with the IVS experience?
Oh yes. And
what did it do for you as
course I say, oh yes, there were negatives.
Uh-huh.
But overall, as I told you earlier, I consider probably the high point of my life.
Uh-huh.
It was a very intense time, but also a very satisfying time. It may sound over dramatic, but in the context that we were working at that time, we had an ideal that we thought was important enough to risk our life for.
Mm-hmm.
And not too many people go through life find something that important.
That's true.
They voluntarily risk their life for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we were all offered early out when Stillman was killed, and someone took it, and I really debated. I probably would have had some hard time with my draft board then.
Mm-hmm.
But that you know, it's something important enough to live out your convictions. Now pause.
Sure. There, we're off of pause again. A nice pause, even if a little longer than we might have thought. Okay. Oh, so getting back to the. You thought of IBS then as too closely linked to AID, but much better now in terms of getting back to some original goals. You're still receiving the newsletter and
yes.
Participating in things of IBS as someone who's gone through the
or whatever.
Yeah. Occasional contributions or not?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Not that I'm trying to solicit,
<That's right.
laughs> but we're just seeing the extent of loyalty that continues on to today. What do you think the IVS's mission was in those years? Mission as an organization, its purpose and goals.
Well, I think their mission would probably have been summed up of human development.
Mm-hmm.
The mission of IVS or the goal was not necessary to be a arm of U.S. policy, and there's where the real tension came.
Mm-hmm.
Because IVSers, I think, saw themselves as part of that mission of human development, and they, in reality, there was some extra baggage tied onto that.
Thrown in.
So I think the mission was probably understood by IVSers, but living that out in that situation, there it comes again, the inherent difficulty in a war zone to carry out that mission. Development, agricultural, community development is empowerment of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing more revolutionary than empowering poor people. And so that's why in one respect, IVS was dangerous to have in that situation. Because it was a lot of revolutionary ideas that we were planting seeds for, that people could take charge of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And the political structure in the Lyle government didn't always respect that. They wanted to respect that. In Hong Sao, these farmers are regular capitalists. I mean, this IRA program changed them from a subsistence level of living.
Mm-hmm.
To a cash income.
Mm-hmm.
That they could do something with. They had very available cash. and became a very sensitive issue.
It did, in very concrete terms. And the Lao farmers really went along with it. They saw the advantage, and
then when that rice piled up in their house and they couldn't sell it, then it really became
Then of course it became hot for you.
You move this rice out, we're moving you out.
But yeah, that's what we covered in the talk, and I'm glad to hear that it made a difference in the outlooks of the people too.
I think a lot of people don't realize how revolutionary development is,
mm-hmm.
whether it's livestock or vegetables or crops or whatever.
Or dressmaking or tailoring or cutting hair or whatever.
Because it's going to overturn the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to change the power structure in the country. It's going to modify it. Maybe I should say that. And so that's...
Yeah, because a lot of the new elite will be buying into the old values, so it may not be revolutionary in a sense, but it certainly will threaten some people at the top.
Yeah, and that's it has to be planned very carefully.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think we also had started at the pause, I just remembered this, that when Deb and Eric came down to say goodnight, mm-hmm. You had just started really talking about how IVS had affected you, and you had said that it was such a seminal event in your own life, and I forget your words, but you know that it was the crucial thing that happened to you.
Yeah, it was
and
a
that
high
you
point.
Knew that even at the time. Yes, high point is the
yeah,
word that you used.
Yeah, it was a high point. I realized at the time.
Uh huh.
It has had long-lasting effects. On the one hand, one aspect of it is, I guess it's made me a little more critical of governments, whether it's my own or any other, because
mm-hmm.
I've seen, I was involved in government functions there much more closely than a person normally is, and see how governments function, make decisions, and carry out their policy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm much more skeptical. I hope it's healthy skeptical, but maybe mm-hmm. sometime my wife thinks it's a negative skepticism, you know.
Well, that's allowable. If you've got a lot of healthy skepticism, you can go over the deep end every once in a while.
I think it's affected my global outlook. I've served a couple terms on our church's National Mission Board.
For your local church?
No, for the national church.
United for the
church
national
Christ.
Church.
I was on the board of directors of the United Church Board for World Ministries.
Uh-huh.
And I know that had a tremendous effect on how I viewed mission work, which a lot of that is development work.
Uh-huh.
And had a underlying effect of decisions and recommendations and such that I made on that board. I presently serve on board of directors of Heifer Project, which is even more dear to my heart,
uh-huh.
because it's a direct livestock development work and that type of thing. And it's, it gives me a background. I can very easily identify with the type of things they're doing and the principles they're working on. Not that I know the details or know everything there is to know about every project, but it gives me a framework.
Yeah, you don't have to micromanage to be a manager.
No, I wouldn't want to. But it gives me a framework to understand, you know, mm-hmm. what the organization's about. And quite frankly, over the years, even before I was on the board of directors, I was raising warning flags. You know, don't get too involved in U.S. aid funding.
This is for the Heifer Project?
Yeah,
okay.
Heifer Project gets involved in that. Years ago, I went to a program committee meeting, and they had country data sheets,
uh-huh.
and it was direct copy from State Department.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
I told him, I said, you cannot do that. I said, you got to get away with that. I said, you're going to get in some sensitive areas in the world, and you're going to get hung on a ball on that.
Uh-huh.
You know, some insurgent group is going to be able to grab that and really, really take you to the coals on that. See, they didn't realize that. But my background in Laos, I was very aware of that and how that can be misconstrued, you know, by the other side. We had an incident in Hong Kong, Hue Sai, where the company makes Metrical that was then taken off the market.
Oh, yeah.
They had tons of this stuff. They was going to donate for refugee relief. Fantastic protein source, but great. The Petalau picked up that that was banned in the United States. It was cancer producing. Boy, did they have a heyday on their propaganda on that. But it just knocked that right in the head. So those subtle, little subtle things, it enabled them to recognize.
So that's what happened to Metrical.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, we,
okay.
We had to refuse it.
It
was very tragically. It was good it would have done it been a million times what any drawbacks would have been. But it is, for instance, I've been involved now in two different projects on refugee settlement in our community.
For Hmong?
In 74 or 75, it was a Hmong family. And now just beginning of last year and this year, it's a Bosnian. In fact, we had two Bosnian families. So I'm very proud of that.
Yeah. And it might not have ever come about, although some of it may have. Working with a Bosnian family may have come about.
That was direct murder's all to being on World Board, so I just saw. I'll have to.
Okay.
I'll have to confess to that.
Yeah.
And.
And what is your work now?
Engineer in a steel stamping plant.
Okay.
Plant engineer.
And I forgot to ask you, when you graduated from college, it was what degree?
Biology.
Okay. So how did you make this jump from biology to IVS, working in agriculture, and then getting over to engineering, now finally in a steel plant? This is a little bit beyond the IBS thing. I mean, usually I would have expected that because of IBS you might have gone back into some sort of biological work that might have been agriculture related.
To say where I got it, I came back from IBS, worked a year, and then went back to school. Worked on the master's for the purpose of getting medical school. And I was not successful that time either.
Okay.
We got into time of quotas. And being a white male was not an advantage. So then I had to work around. We looked around for something to do. I had a business opportunity, a combination of hardware store and electrical business. And I worked electrical that year before going to master's. So we bought that business and electrical expanded, and then in 82 or something like that, combination of things, Reaganomics and some other things, we closed electrical out and I had to work in a steel stamping plant and maintenance and got into plant engineering, so that's how that happened.
Oh, okay. So that's a work development that's quite separated from the IVS experience.
From the IVS experience.
Yeah.
I would say, I always promised myself when I was in IBS that I would someday get back and develop my work. And, I guess that's one of my disappointments, that I have not been full-time development work. I've kind of kept my involvement with Board for Ministries, now with Heifer Project.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my
that's at least some.
Yeah.
Well, and you've had the children, too.
Yeah, well,
raising things like that.
You get involved
too.
In family and
yeah,
and that type of thing.
Have you thought about going back to Laos?
Oh yeah.
Any immediate plans or?
No concrete plans at this time. I've also been involved in peace efforts in Sri Lanka.
That's right. You pointed something out when you were giving me the house tour.
And that's so that indirectly may get me back in the region. That's been an interesting, a terrible roller coaster ride. Our church, in fact, our first mission field was in Sri Lanka. First missionaries were sent to India, and India wouldn't let them land or wouldn't let them stay, and they sent them, they went down to Sri Lanka. That was about our first mission field. And our church there happens to be predominantly in a Tamil area. And so we had the missionary, the couple you saw up there from Sri Lanka, visit here for a year in a conference, missionaries and residents. Well, we become involved trying to seek some kind of a peacemaking role. And it's really kind of strange. There's this minister in southern Indiana, rural, about as rural as you can get, and several of us have gathered together, and people can't believe it, that people from the Indiana Kentucky Conference and the peace efforts in Sri Lanka, you know. But he happens to live in the same district as Lee Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
Who's chair of the House Foreign Relations Committee. Or was until the
Republican
took over. And Hamilton's got very interested in it. And it's been amazing the receptivity we've had in State Department, UN, and such. And a lot of them were saying, yes, there's things need to be done, but we can't do it, so you folks go ahead and do it. And we just been kind of a loose ad hoc group. And it really looked good when they were having their peace talks. And the people we had contact with were giving us a lot of credit for bringing that about, but then it's broken down and just terrible now. So, But we're still hopes to either get a congressional delegation to go over or get the Carter Center involved at some point. We are doing the behind the scenes work trying to bring some reconciliation. We are perceived by the Sinhalese government being pro-Tamil. And that is where our main connection is. This fellow that kind of heading up our committee, he has met with the head of Tamils at their request. And we've been very, very frank with them. You know, that we are not beholden to any group. And yes, we will meet with you, but if you try to exploit our meeting with you and to your political purposes, you know, we got other things to do, and we can go back home to Indiana and do our things, you know.
And they respected that?
Yeah, they have so far. Whenever we have conferences or meetings or such, they usually send a representative. Usually a guy from New York will come in and see what's going on. So it's, like I say, it's been a roller coaster. We thought things were going real good there for a while, and I want to say they broke off. So that, you know, I'd probably never been involved in that. We've been to the IBS experience. And I have not been directly involved in those meetings and such, basically in Washington, D.C. There's an ad hoc group. I've been more of the background, but I've been able to help the committee get a feel of how to function with governments. I think which has been a valuable contribution I've been able to make for them to turn. I'm so tied up in work that I can't get away. You know, like
yeah, I would suspect.
But so that's been, I think that's been another interesting spinoff of the IBS experience.
So it has had quite a few areas.
Oh, yes.
Not just as the high point of your life that has broadened your perspectives, but has provided some concrete experience for the present activity that you're in, even if you don't have, you know, a job that takes you there to work in development.
Yeah.
It still is affecting your participation in some very concrete ways. It's getting past late.
Time is flowing fast.
Yeah, it certainly has gone very fast. I thank you for sitting down with me tonight.
You're welcome.
And for your hospitality in your home.
Glad to have you.
I guess I better turn this off.
If you want, I'll just maybe bring in a postscript, a few instances.
Oh, yes, yeah. Any, yeah, I was,
you may,
you know,
or may not be interested in.
Well, you know, you just reminded me that the real last question that I ask people is if I have somehow not asked them something that they feel is important. So
I think we've covered those points. As you know, I gave you this list of incidences that I've compiled, and I just gone through here. One of the interesting little things that happened when I was in Ban Hoi Sai, I was working at a remote village. It was the type of deal I'd be flown in during the day, and then I'd come out before the night. Would not stay overnight there. But I was working this one little valley north of Hoi Sai on the fish pond productions. And the at lunch, while the Chow Mung, the district officer, invited me into his house for a meal, and I get set down beside this fellow who's a general of some type. And he had a question for me. He said, what would be the U.S. policy if I were to set up and affect my own country up here? And he was going to carve out some of Laos.
And make his own independent nation?
Make his own independent nation.
Oh, dear me.
So here's this little Indiana farm boy being asked. He was asking me, the representative of the United States government, you talk about the role of an IVSer. So, of course, by that time, I was experienced enough in Laos that had realized that you don't know what kind of deals various agencies might have cut with this guy or where he was coming from. And I had no idea what was going on. Said Joe Flipsy was kind of the veteran guy down in Hoi Sai. So I got on the...
I've heard his name so much, yes.
Oh, he was a great mentor. He really was. So I got in a radio, and I was able to raise a plane. And I said, give Flipsy message, and he just comes up to site such and such. Well, I'd worked with Joe enough that he respected me. And if I said for him to come up, he came up. And a little later, he comes walking up and says, what'd you call me up for? And I told him. He says, okay, I'll talk to him.
He's going to talk to this guy.
Yeah. So he went off to talk to this guy. He got done. He's walking back to his plane, walked past me. He says, you did right in calling me up. And that's all I ever heard about that incident.
Really?
To this day, I don't know what was going on.
Okay.
But you talk about a question being asked of you, you know, and a little IVS being asked of. So I don't know what was going on in that.
He is in Las Casas, Tennessee.
Yes, I know Tennessee. You got his address?
Sure.
Maybe you want to pause it there until I get that.
Okay. Okay, we're back on.
In Hong Sa, I had what's called a Paul Lin. That's your adoptive father.
Yes.
And this father...
That was where again?
In Hong Sa.
In Hong Sa, okay.
And this guy took me under his wing, and... like I was his adopted son. And then he started, we got an interesting conversation one day. He thought I should have a Lao wife. Well, I told him that I had a girlfriend in the States. But he saw no problem in that. I said, well, but when I go back to the United States, I'm going to get married. To her. He says, no problem. When you're in Laos, you have Lao wife, and when you're in the United States, you have American wife. And he happened to have a daughter who was eligible for marriage. And so this argument went on for a while, and I'm trying to think of, you know, how I could approach this argument. So finally I thought, I'll play my trump card. I said, well, if I have a Lao wife, And then I'd have children. What would happen to the children when I'd leave and go back to America?
Yeah.
He says, "Oh, Tom, I'd be glad to have them." And he was serious.
Really?
He was serious. So, you know, there was not the stigma there of of American fathering the children. Like I say, he just happened to have a daughter. He was trying to get married off. So, but I did not have a Lao wife.
And notice I didn't have to pause there. So,
but a follow-up on that, I don't know if you've if you're interviewing Bob Thompson.
Well, I could look up to see if we even.
Bob Thompson is now head of the Winrock Foundation in Arkansas. He was former dean of School of Agriculture at Purdue University. But Bob Thompson and his wife Karen visited Deb and I soon after I was back from overseas. And the fellows that I worked with in Bon Hui Sai, they made a tape recording and sent to me a cassette tape. Well, on this tape, these guys speaking in Laotian were joking. And they said, "Oh, by the way, we visit your wife down the village, and she's fine, the baby's doing great, looks just like you and all this." They was carrying on, you know. Bob and Karen sat there, and I played this, and they didn't know that these fellows were joking. They didn't know if Deb knew what was going on either.
Uh-oh.
Oh, were they uncomfortable? it was cruel what I did to them. I just laughed my head off, you know. In relation to, you know, books and such, a statement was, a couple of things that was said to me, but a statement I'll never forget when I got to Laos, and they said, this related to complexities in getting involved in the situation. He said, "Once you've been here a week, you can write a book. Once you've been here a month, you can write a magazine article. Once you've been here a year, it's hard to write a letter home." And I really found that true.
Of course, you did keep up a week, a letter per week.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. But I mean, it, you know, the letters that IBS publishes, you know, I thought I was going to do that, and I think I only got two of them out.
Oh, no.
And then the other thing was, we was talking to an agriculturalist there in Laos, and this advice has served me well way beyond Laos. He said, "You know, you guys are coming in here young. You got a lot of knowledge." He said, "You better find out why that villager is doing what he's doing."
Before you suggest any changes.
And then, if you got an idea or a suggestion change, make it, but don't do it until you find out why, or your lover really screw things up. And that has served me well in all facets of my life. Find out why people are doing what they're doing.
People are doing, are always doing things for rational reasons. Find out the rationale.
That's right.
Then you can operate.
These folks are dealing from perspective to 2,000-3,000 years of culture and history.
And experience in what works and what don't.
Yeah, and you're coming in here, a country that's just 200 years old.
That's right. That's right. And more important than that too is they've got their families to feed. And you're always going to have food while you're there.
That's right.
Yeah. Those were a couple good things to conclude with. So, thank you much.
Well, we scratched the surface.
Well, it was. I think it was a fairly deep, deep scratch, though. You know,
I could. A bunch more there.
Yeah, but then we'd be up until dawn.
Yep. I wouldn't be. I'm not gonna be worth a hoot tomorrow anyway. But I knew we'd be late.
Yeah. So anyway, I will turn this off now. So good night, and thank you.